Welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show with Dr. Mystery and Donna Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show. This is Dr. Mystery, your host, board-certified urologist, and founder of NAU Urology Specialist, the bespoke urology practice in Austin.
Oh, a little callback from a previous guest.
That's, I'm just making words up now.
I'm joined,
as always, by Donna Lee. She really makes the show. She's our business development manager. She has been our practice manager and an integral part of our practice's story for how many years now?
7 years,
Dr.
Mystery.
She gets a sperm pin for every year she's been with us. She's got more sperm on her lapel than she
did
in
college.
High school.
That's right. I thought it was college. Is it
high school? Did you go to college? I don't know.
I don't know.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, how do people get a hold of us, Donna?
You call us right away at 512-238-0762. You can also visit our super cute little website and see our shining little faces there. It's armormenshealth.com. You can submit your questions that we will answer anonymously to that website. And remember that we're podcastable. When you get your car, put on your favorite podcast site like Spotify, and we can be there, right there for you.
So I love surgeons.
I know you do.
And I feel like the urologist soulmate is the butt surgeon.
Perhaps.
And we have the original ass man himself.
That's right.
Dr. Thiru Lakshman.
He's like, no.
Dr. Lakshman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You are a member of Texas Colorectal Specialists.
That is correct.
And how long have you been in the Austin area?
I've been in Austin in practice for 14 years.
Tell us about your education. Where did you go to college and medical school?
Sure. I went to college at the University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and then I went to medical school at the University of Kentucky. And then
They have medical schools in Kentucky?
Yeah,
oh.
it's amazing.
Wow.
I know. Well,
did they give you safety knives and safety scissors there?
You'd be surprised. Yeah, that's right. Generally, we're lucky if at the end of a clinic day you find one set of teeth amongst all the patients.
Wow.
Together. Yeah.
All right.
No, it was great. It was very nice. Yeah, my family actually is in the Tennessee, Kentucky area. So I went back home for medical school. And then I went back to Philadelphia for many years. I did all my general surgery training up there at Jefferson University Medical College there, and then down to Florida at the Cleveland Clinic for my colorectal fellowship.
And when you were coming up, robotics as a component of colorectal surgery wasn't necessarily kind of the standard. So you really had to learn a lot of that after training while you were in practice. What benefits does robotic and laparoscopic and minimally invasive surgery have for your field?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think it's a huge benefit. And you're right. When I first started, like in my surgery training, there was laparoscopy, you know, which is sort of the minimally invasive technique that's sort of been around for a long time, for the past 20 years or so, maybe even longer, 30 years. Robotics was just getting started. And it's really, I mean, as you know, you do robotic surgery as well, too. It's really this sort of latest evolution of minimally invasive surgery. Colorectal surgery specifically really is well suited to minimally invasive surgery because a lot of the things we do, they already started doing laparoscopically many years ago. And it was a really natural evolution to do it robotically.
Now, not all colorectal surgeons are able to do this. I mean, most urologists that are going to remove prostates do it robotically. But there are still, you know, a good number of open colorectal surgeons.
Absolutely. Actually, we just were looking at this for another talk I was doing. The national rate of open colorectal surgery is still around 40%, 40 to 45%.
Which is fascinating because there's only 2% of prostates are removed.
That's
open
it,
nowadays.
2%.
So, yeah,
no
I mean,
kidding.
98% are going to be done open. I mean, robotically.
The rate of increases, it's increasing steadily for sure. And what we're seeing is with robotics coming out, that the people that are adopting minimally invasive surgery are the number of colorectal surgeons is increasing significantly, but they're actually skipping laparoscopy and going straight to robotics as the modality because I think it's easier to learn. It's a little bit more intuitive. And so it's almost like, you know, the benefits of robotic surgery is it's like you're doing open surgery inside the belly.
Inside the belly.
That's right.
And it can be very intuitive.
For sure.
Now, in our field, you know, we're seeing technological advancements. We're treating a lot more conditions that we were treating with medicines, now with surgical interventions. What about your field? What are some of the technological advances that you've seen or medical advances you're seeing or just kind of evolution of your practice?
Yeah, in colorectal surgery, so I think the first thing obviously is minimally invasive surgical advancements, you know, like robotics. That's really making surgeries that were technically very difficult and that were done with big, huge open surgeries. Now we can do with 5, you know, centimeter size incisions, which all the benefits of that, right? So less pain, better cosmesis, less time in the hospital. So I think that technological advancement is there. Within robotics itself, there's new technological advancements now. When I do a surgery on the robotic system, I'm able to look at blood flow in real time.
That's really a big improvement. Now we know that the anastomosis, because you not only have to remove the tumor, but you got to put the colon back together.
That's right.
And that putting it back together can be real dangerous if it leaks, because now the person goes for another surgery.
That's exactly right.
But now you can evaluate that blood flow in real time.
For sure, yeah. We used to be able to, you can do it, and there's other ways you do it. We can actually do what's called a leak test. It's sort of like how you'd look for a leak in a tire by submerging it in water and you know, insufflating it with air, and we look for bubbles. We can still do that. But now by these added technologies of, you know, it's amazing. They basically inject something through the IV, and 60 seconds later, you can see all of the blood vessels light up a fluorescent green color. You just toggle a switch when you're sitting at the robotic console, and you can see what's getting blood supply and what's not. And then so, you know, the three main things we're looking at is we're looking at blood flow, and we're looking at the tension, and then we're looking at the anastomosis itself, you know, the connection between the two pieces of bowel that we hook back together. And robotically, with these technological advancements, we can see the blood flow really in real time and look at it too.
So one day you got up and you were like, I could be a heart surgeon. I could be a urologist if I studied hard enough. But instead you were like, I'm going to spend my entire life in the colon where there's nothing but poop.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because patients, and it's invariably when I have them like on the table, ass up, and I'm doing an exam on them, and they say, I just can't understand why you would decide to do this, choose this as a career.
I hear it all the time. When I'm sitting on the stool and examining their testicle, they're like, why? Yeah. Why would you do
well,
this?
Well, we know why you.
Well, you know, some of us have a thing.
Right. The funny thing is that I'm there doing it, and I'm like, well, if I wasn't here doing this, who would be doing it? Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do
my,
it.
That's my pat answer. Somebody's got to do it. Right.
Somebody's got to be here.
No, I think for me, it was a very varied specialty in the sense that I could do lots of different things. When I was in medical school, and then I knew in medical school I wanted to do surgery, some type of surgery. I thought about neurosurgery, and I realized, A, I wasn't smart enough.
And you're way too funny.
And
you would have been a sore thumb in that boring university.
I would see those neurosurgeons, the residents, and by the end of their residency, their souls were so crushed and so deflated. They had no—
And they aged so poorly.
Their humanity was gone out of all of them. I said, right. I don't want to be like that. And I noticed the colorectal guys were like, you know, they dressed nicely. They were nice. They were friendly. They seemed less stressed, you know. But in
like a dermatologist.
Yeah, like I wish.
They're the dermatologist of surgery.
That's right. Yeah, but then I knew I wanted to do surgery, and I looked into, and I decided on general surgery, and colorectal was the best fit for me because I could do small, minimally invasive procedures. I could do colonoscopies, and then I can do big surgeries. I have a particular interest in cancer and colorectal cancer, and so I can focus on that. So,
and you do a lot of work to get people to get their screening colonoscopies.
Absolutely.
Colon cancer being one of the most preventable diseases. Why is it preventable because of colonoscopy?
Yeah, it's the third most commonly diagnosed cancer in the United States each year. About
prostate's number one. We're number one.
Good for you.
We're number one. Okay,
we're shooting for it. We're shooting for number one. It's very prevalent, you know, and I think now we're seeing more and more people get diagnosed because I think there's more screenings, but also I think there's a lot of environmental factors which we quite
absolutely
haven't
gotten. Absolutely. Diet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Environmental carcinogens.
Yeah, and I think there's particularly that.
mRNA vaccines.
I think.
Oh, there it is.
We're going down that road.
Well, we have an audience.
I didn't know this was that kind of podcast.
We have an audience. We have an audience.
You're just tailoring to the demographic. I see. Nice. But I think it's going to come out that there's going to be some particular environmental factors, because I'm seeing – it used to be in the first half of my career, it was all people over the age of 60, 65. Now it's the majority, if not half of them, are under the age.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I see 25-year-olds, 28-year-olds, 35-year-olds with really aggressive – colon and rectal cancer.
And these people have financial disincentives to get colonoscopies because they have high deductible health plans, they have commercial insurance, they may not be insured.
That's right.
Unlike our Medicare population where it's easy to kind
that's
of force
exactly
them
right.
to,
yeah.
to go through it.
So and it's shifting.
That's worrisome.
It is worrisome. And it's shifting, right? Because I think they're seeing from population studies that it's younger people are getting it. So now the screening age went from 50 to 45. And there's talk even that it may get lower to 40, actually, because they're seeing, just like I was saying, we're seeing younger and younger people with it. But the reason it's so important is because at the colonoscopy, if you find a polyp, you're really heading it off of the pass, right? The progression to a colon cancer is you start off as a polyp. The polyp slowly grows over months to even years. And then not every polyp becomes a cancer, but every cancer, you know, 99% of all colon
started as a polyp.
So if you can catch it a polyp, you've effectively cured it. And then you can identify that subset, that population of patients, and say, we know you're a polyp former. We need to watch you more closely. We'll do colonoscopies more frequently. And that's how we can prevent it.
I feel like somebody who was very well trained. I went to Baylor College of Medicine, of course. I feel like that wasn't the standard conventional wisdom when I trained, that the polyp became cancer. There were polyps and then there were villus polyps, and then there was, you know, like there was this range.
Yeah.
But has kind of the thinking changed now? Like most polyps are bad?
No, you just didn't listen in medical school.
He was too busy.
Yeah. You were thinking about all those testicular exams you were going
right.
to do.
That's so, right. When it came to the colon, I was like, you know,
that stuff,
just
yeah.
poop it out, buddy.
Yeah. No, it's how I describe it is it's actually a spectrum, right? And so it's you start at the very benign end of the spectrum is their polyps, what we call hyperplastic polyps, which are basically like ditzels, little warts on the inside of the lining of the colon. And then the progression goes tubular adenoma, villous adenoma, tubule villous adenoma, and then dysplasia, which then becomes cancer. So it's really a sort of a spectrum from least, you know, less aggressive to more aggressive.
Well, your work in colon cancer screening and support of that is amazing. How do people become patients of yours and what's your website?
For sure. So you can go to tcrscolondocs.com. You can also just do a search for Texas Colorectal Surgical Specialist. Is that right? Yeah, Texas Colorectal Specialist. We're also a subsidiary of Texas Oncology. So if you go to the Texas Oncology website, you can find us through there. That's probably the easiest way, those methods.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Hello, and welcome back to the Armour Men's Health Show. I'm Dr. Mystery, your host, board-certified urologist and founder of NAU Urology Specialists. I'm always so honored to have my co-host, Donna Lee. See, I'm pumping you up more
hey,
and more.
That's so nice. The nice words are nicer than the bad words.
Donna Lee is a professional t-shirt designer, and on her part-time, she also is our business development manager. So thank you very
that's
much.
Right. For that. You're welcome for all the t-shirts. Thank you.
And we're joined again by one of my favorite surgeons in this city, Dr. Thiru Laxman with Texas Colorectal Specialist. Thank you so much again for joining us, Thiru.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So we talked in the last segment about colon cancer screening, the importance of it, and kind of new innovations in colorectal surgery. I thought we would spend a little bit of time just talking about chronic constipation in young women.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
my
just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know, all of us.
I'm happy to talk about it.
All of us in surgery have like these third rail issues.
That's
and the,
right.
And the chronic constipation. Constipation in the middle-aged woman, it just kind of litters the surgical practice.
I have a great technique for that. I said, let me introduce you to one of my younger associates.
Dr. Turley.
That's right. Yeah. They are an expert in this field, complicated field.
Oh, man. You know, because so much of how the colon operates, functional as well as anatomic. So, you
absolutely.
Know, how we poop and so much of the pooping problems occur from just bad choices that you've made in the beginning.
It's very true. Yeah.
So I thought we would talk a little bit about just the function of the colon, how it works and what makes it not work so well.
And do all colorectal surgeons eat good food? Like do they eat organically? I want to know that.
Well, we tell everybody that we do. That
right?
We
what did you eat? What did you eat right after your colonoscopy?
That's a great question. I think I had. I must be honest. I'm pretty sure I had Whataburger.
She had Whataburger too. It was amazing.
And Dr. Miller, he said he had a cheeseburger and oysters
and
champagne after.
Yeah, that's right.
So you tell your patients
he's
to take
a lot
it easy.
Fancier than me.
That's, we all agree. Yes. We all agree. Champagne and oysters with a cheeseburger.
I know.
What restaurant was that?
Right.
Okay. So when it comes to the function of the colon, what is the colon's purpose?
Yeah, so you know, it's a pretty basic, simple, and elegant organ if you think about it. The primary goal of the
colon, like you,
just like me. That's right. Yeah,
simple.
Me, colon, elegant, simple. That's right. Yeah, its primary function is really water reabsorption, and at its basis, you know, if you put it in the layman's terms, you say it's basically turning liquid waste into solid waste. And so as waste that, you know, you eat food, it gets digested in the stomach and then into the small intestine, you have several feet of small intestine. It's at that point, stomach to small intestine, most of the nutrient and vitamin reabsorption, all that stuff occurs. As you get to the colon, it's trapping waste and it's converting and it's basically reabsorbing a lot of water. That's why when people get sick, if they have gastroenteritis or, you know, Montezuma's revenge, they get dehydrated, right? Because you're losing all this water
out of you because it doesn't get reabsorbed.
Because it's not getting reabsorbed. So the primary function is water reabsorption and to create solid waste. Now, there are some things at the proximal or the beginning part of the colon where you do get some nutrients reabsorbed there too, but the primary function is that. And you're right in the sense that it can be a long-term both functional and environmental thing that can affect your colon function. I hear a lot of stories of people that come in and they have chronic constipation, and I always ask them, I say, well, as a child, did you have a problem? They said, yeah, you know, my parents told me that they always had to give me like enemas and that I was in the bathroom all the time, and I think it starts at a young age. And then what happens from a mechanical standpoint is if you're chronically constipated and the stool is sitting in there for a while and you have a lot of stasis of the poop in there, you know, the colon actually becomes elongated too, which then contributes to more constipation as well.
I have a very long colon.
I'm sure.
I'm telling. It's impressive. My uvula and my colon are very long.
Oh, is that right?
So the colon moves poop through peristalsis, meaning that the muscles have a contraction mechanism propels. So the heavier the thing is, the harder it is to move it. Is that right?
I suppose, yeah. I think if you think about it from a purely mechanical standpoint, I guess that's correct.
So why does fiber help us poop is the point?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and there's our different types of fiber, right? There's soluble and insoluble fiber, and you can get them, you know, certain types of foods have certain types of fiber and fiber content in them. How the fiber works is it does two things. It traps waste and it draws the waste and sort of congeals it and solidifies it, right? Which to your point about making it sort of more bulky, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it also can draw in a little bit more water and reabsorb a little bit more water as well, both things, you know, and that contributes to the propulsive activity of the colon. The colon has circular muscles around its lining, you know, and there's this very complex innervation of those circular muscles of the colon. And there's this very complex, we don't think about it, right? When we think about poop, we don't think about all the complex interplay between our brain and the nerves. I know you do. You spend hours on the toilet thinking about this, right? But that complex interplay between those things actually contributes to it as well, too. And that's why, you know, when you have more solid, bulky stool, particularly in the lower part of your colon, the rectum, which is the last part of the colon, it's highly innervated. And actually, there's all these complex interplay of nerves in there that say, oh, this is more solid waste. This is more liquid waste. This is gas. I need to
fart.
You know, in your case, I need to change my diapers. I, you know, whatever, hey, whatever it may be. You know. But yes, to your point about the bulkiness of the stool. If it's too bulky, yes, it can be difficult to pass it. So we have to find, the body is trying to create this appropriate balance.
All of this innervation stuff that you're talking about of the distal or the end of the colon is important because I think that the body feels like it failed us if we poop or pee on ourselves. And so we have these mechanisms to like keep us from pooping and peeing on ourselves. What risk factors do you see that when people do start having fecal incontinence, what are some risk factors? And like, I know it sounds weird. What are the symptoms like of fecal incontinence?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you bring this up because unfortunately it's very common and, you know, no one wants to talk about it. For some reason, you're lucky. People don't mind talking about urinary incontinence. It's sort of like not, I'm not saying they love talking about it, but you're more likely going to have a older.
People at parties aren't telling you they're pooping their pants.
No, they're not.
Pooping their pants?
Yeah.
Pooping their pants.
We'll, you know, but I think it's more socially acceptable for an older woman to be like, oh, when I cough or when I do, I have a little bit of leakage because every woman expects
that. Don't try to pretend to be like me.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, I've always wanted to be like.
Stay in your lane.
But those same women probably could have some component of fecal incontinence as well, too, but no one's going to talk about it. There's this data point that says there's around 12 million people in the United States that have some form of fecal incontinence.
Wow. And it's very uncomfortable to discuss it.
Very uncomfortable,
What do you think the primary care doctors are telling these patients when they say I'm leaking a little poop? You think they're just saying...
They say, go see a colorectal surgeon.
Right? And then your wait time is 6 months. I think a lot of people get discouraged. And I think that makes it difficult to treat.
It is difficult. And it's an embarrassing topic. But to your question about the risk factors, I mean, we tend to see it more often in women than men. And I think that's because of primarily women are, you know, childbearing and when they're having babies. That's probably the primary risk factor or causative, you know, issue for fecal incontinence. You have this large baby. It's pushing on the pelvis. Sometimes there's a lot of trauma with childbirth as well, too. And there's this complex, you know, web of nerves that sit in the pelvis that control bowel function, bladder function, sexual function, and all those nerves can get sort of irritated and damaged, sometimes permanently, with childbirth or pelvic trauma. And what happens is as a younger woman, they're able to accommodate that better, right?
Because they have more strength in their pelvis.
They have more strength in their pelvic floor. And as they get older, the strength goes away, hormonal changes with menopause, other things like that. Then you add in the factors of straining and constipation and irregularity bowel movements, and then everything sort of like culminates with these episodes of first, you know, small amounts of leakage, and then it gets worse and worse.
And, you know, for 70% of women, you're going to be able to treat them medically, but 30% will really benefit from some type of surgical intervention. Would
Correct.
You agree?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And as I practice more and more in medicine, I'm finding that as we have an aging population, neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis, they're having increasing numbers of urinary manifestations that are kind of unrecognized. Do you think that the same goes through for colon and fecal issues in this population?
Yeah, I'd even argue that probably that exact same population that you're seeing probably have some component of fecal incontinence, but to our earlier point, are probably not even talking about it.
Right.
You know?
And most of the time, they're getting primarily cared for by a neurologist who, and we know these people, they don't want to look at anything below the chin.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. That's right.
These people are very uncomfortable with poop and pee.
For sure.
And joking.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And all of these.
I thought about neurology when I was in medical school, and I realized you don't cure anything.
Yeah, we all did. Everybody goes through those 6 weeks thinking about becoming a neurologist.
That's right. Yeah.
And so then at the very end of the pooper is where a lot of people start having problems.
Right.
Hemorrhoids, fissures, and anal itching and things right there.
Sure.
And most of those things can be taken care of with good dietary hygiene as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes just the simple act of adding fiber, you know, enough fiber or a fiber supplement to your diet takes care of all those problems. You create a more easy to pass, complete, well-formed bowel movement, and you're sitting on the toilet less, which means you're straining less, which means then your hemorrhoids, which are just blood vessels that we all have. You know, it's this common misnomer.
One on the left, two on the right.
That's right. Good for you. You did listen in medical school.
I did.
Yeah. Just that part about
just that one part.
Just that one part, yeah.
Because I always thought I had an extra one.
Maybe you do. You are special.
Overachiever.
That's your uvula you're thinking of. That was coming down. The uvula was hanging down.
Wow, that's a low uvula.
By sitting and straining and pushing, you're engorging those blood vessels. It's like, I tell people, it's like having varicose veins in the anal canal. And then those get swollen and irritated. Those cause, you know, mucousy leakage. That makes you wipe more. That
and then you itch and it goes through the whole problem.
Right.
So,
it's a big
so good dietary hygiene and fiber. We are looking for a sponsorship from Metamucil if any of you people are listening. Thiru, I really appreciate you coming on board. It's always so much fun to have
you. My pleasure.
How do people make an appointment with you for their screening colonoscopy or other colorectal needs?
For sure. You can reach us at our website, www.tcrscolondocs.com. You can do a web search for Texas colorectal specialists. You can also look at the Texas Oncology website, and you can find a link to us through there just to a search for colorectal surgery. And like you mentioned, we run the gamut of from very minor, everyday benign issues like anal itching or hemorrhoids to screening colonoscopies to complicated colorectal cancers and minimally invasive surgical techniques. So we're from soup to nuts, take care of it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Armour Men's Health Show is brought to you by NAU Urology Specialists. For questions or to schedule an appointment, please call 512-238-0762 or online at armormenshealth.com.